All right, heads up, fellow T-Riders. Starting July 1st, it's going to be more expensive to ride the T and the commuter rail. Yesterday, the MBTA's Fiscal and Management Control Board voted unanimously to increase fare prices by just over 6%. There was one abstention. The decision faced intense opposition from dozens of transportation experts and advocates, but some say it could actually provide a revenue boost that the T desperately needs. And joining us now to talk about this is former state Transportation Secretary Jim Aloisi. He's also a member of the Transit Matters Board and the principal of Trimount Consulting. Jim, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thanks for having me.
And also here with us is Charlie Chipio, senior fellow at the Pioneer Institute and the head of Chipio Strategies. Hi, Charlie.
Hello.
And listeners, we want to hear from you on this as well. How do you feel about the T fare hike? Will you stop riding the T now that it's going to be more expensive? Do you think this will actually improve service for the MBTA? You can give us a call, 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Or you can tweet at us at Radio Boston. So let me start with both of you guys. Just give your general reaction to this fare increase. Is this a justified raise?
Well, no, I have opposed the fare hike, and I don't think it's justified by the numbers. And I think what happened yesterday really underscores what's really happening here. And so you've got a few people who think, well, the legislature allows us to have these incremental increases on a regular basis, so we should always do that as a way to sort of predictably raise MBTA fares. But what you saw yesterday were many members of the Fiscal Management and Control Board publicly expressing what many of us in the advocacy community have known and have been talking about for a while, which is basically that board has used all the tools in the toolbox in terms of its ability to generate net new revenue. The capital needs, the capital investment needs of the system are so large that the only way to solve it is not through a fare hike. It's through legislative and gubernatorial action at a scale that the T on its own initiative can't possibly undertake. And so while I'm glad that the fare hike kept bus riders harmless and kept a variety of riders harmless, that was a wise decision, I think what was really telegraphed there was the need to move this discussion to Beacon Hill, where we need significant action in the first 6 months of this year if we're going to get out of the hole that we're in.
So we'll get into some of those big picture solutions that you might be talking about. But Charlie, your initial reaction seeing this fare increase?
My initial reaction was sort of a lukewarm okay on it. I was very glad to see that the bus routes were exempted and the fares for the elderly and the kind of last minute changes that were made. I do think we're in a situation right now where the money is probably needed, but I think we really need to get about doing the business to make these needed far less often in the future. And also, we can't put all of the weight on the riders of the T. You know, we really need to start looking at the tolling and congestion pricing kind of issues that that could also raise.
Yeah, I think that's been revenue. The natural reaction for some of the advocates saying, hey, folks who are falling low income might have a hard time meeting these fare increases.
Right.
How do you respond to those
concerns? I think you're seeing in places like Seattle and some other places where now the technology exists to be able to reduce fares for low-income people. And I think that the T has been dramatically behind on technology, to say the least, over the years. And I think that, we really need to start looking at that kind of technology to make the T more accessible to more people.
All right. I want to go right to the phones here. We've got Eric in Worcester wants to weigh in. Eric, welcome to Radio Boston. What's on your mind?
Yeah, so I appreciate you taking my call. Thank you so much, and thank you all for talking about such an important topic. I think that this is really going to create an undue burden for a lot of riders. I commute in, like you mentioned, from Worcester, and for us, our monthly passes are going to go up by $25 a month. That's $300 a year, and for a lot of people, they aren't going to be able to afford that cost, and I think it's really unfortunate that for Worcester, we were the only meeting outside of Zone 4, and that meeting was only added on after the Central Mass Caucus weighed in asking for a meeting. So I think that often we're considered sort of an afterthought of the MBTA, despite the fact that we provide a substantial amount of commuter rail riders.
Some great points, Eric. What do you guys think? Was there enough thought put into kind of the expanse of where the commuter rail serves?
Well, the danger we have, and the caller is right. What the caller is pointing out is that fare hikes like this, what they do is they will push riders onto vehicles, right? We can hold lower income people harmless if we try to do that. That's great. But if we push other riders, what I call riders who choose to take the T, onto Uber or Lyft or back into their car, we're adding to our chronic traffic congestion, and we're taking a completely wrong turn, no pun intended, when it comes to looking, advancing a sustainable mobility future. And so that caller raises a point. I understand there are many places within Boston where the monthly charge to park a car is less now than the commuter rail pass for the month. That's not credible as a way for us to think that we're going to manage a mobility system in Massachusetts.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting point. And to that point, the MBTA themselves have predicted this is going to lead to a 1.3% decrease in riders. We spoke with Chris Dempsey, the director of transportation for MA, Transportation Advocacy Group, earlier, and he said basically those riders are just going to head to their cars.
1% of ridership is 10,000 cars that are now back on our roads. Do we want those cars on the Pike or 93 or Route 2? Because that's where those trips are going to show up.
So this is an issue that obviously resonates with a lot of people in Boston. We talked recently about the congestion survey that said we had some of the worst congestion in the country. Is this, Charlie, going to just put more cars on the road?
It is. And I mean, I think that's why I think it's important that we also pursue these tolling and congestion pricing kind of solutions to this. And it can't all be on the back of the T, because clearly we want people to ride the T. We don't want to push people off the T.
So I think there's an interesting question there. You mentioned, Jim, Uber and Lyft and kind of these ride-sharing services that have become a large part of transportation in Boston. Is there a way, how should we be approaching dealing with those? I know Mayor Walsh has supported an increase in the 20-cent fee on those rides, but is there a realistic way that we can raise revenue?
Sure, and I'm actually calling on the legislature in the first 6 months of this year to take three steps. Step one, raise the fees on Uber and Lyft on transportation network companies significantly, you know, not by another 20 cents, but by another by a couple of bucks, and dedicate that money to public transportation. Number two, have a carbon tax on non-residential parking in communities within the inner core of the Metro Boston region. Number three, enact into law Senator Lesser's regional ballot initiative proposal, which is co-sponsored by 32 other legislators, including the chairman of the Senate Transportation Committee. That would allow cities and towns to, like they do in L.A. and Denver and St. Louis and many other places, to put on the ballot proposals to increase local fees for local transportation and mobility projects. You combine those initiatives together, and the speaker today said he wants the business community engaged. Fine. Let's put out some tax incentives for the business community to do things like get their employees for free to MBTA commuter rail, right? Let's let the business community roll out the region's largest electric vehicle charging platform. We could do a lot of things. There's no one silver bullet, but all of those things that I'm talking about combined could make a real difference, and that's what we need to be thinking about.
What do you think, Charlie? Would you support those types
of... Yeah, I mean, I would support some of them. I'm concerned about the... about going too hard on the TNCs. I mean, there is a certain degree here to which clearly it is what people want. And, you know, I think that we can certainly create incentives for them to ride the T. But the reality is that if some of these TNCs are going to, are able to provide inexpensive rides that go point to point, you know, I don't think we can say that's not good and you have to ride the T. I mean, I think we need to improve the T. And yes, I don't have a problem with some increase on the fee, but I don't think we need to jack that fee up to essentially say to people, well, this is what you want to do, but we're not going to let you do it.
Do you have faith that this money is actually going to improve the T and improve service for riders?
Well, no. I mean, look, I have...
That's not heartening.
Well, no. I mean, look, I mean, this is where Jim and I disagree. I mean... I feel like there's no amount of money that you can put into the T right now that will really improve anything. I think they have made, for the first time, some serious progress in the last, you know, since 2015. But I think that for the money to matter at the T and really make a difference in people's lives, I don't expect the T to be a hyper, efficient organization, but we do need the T to get to the point of being a run-of-the-mill inefficient government agency. And it's very, very far from that right now.
All right, we're going to get right back to the phones. But, Jim, I'm just curious, as a former member of an inefficient government agency, what's your response
to that?
Well,
I think the T, look, I think the T does a better job than we give it credit for. It. The problem is not the people who work at the T. The problem is they don't have the resources. That was made very clear at the meeting yesterday. And so, look, we're going to need $11, maybe $15 billion to do what we need to do. But we're going to need $3 or $4 billion to electrify the regional rail system and give people frequent all-day service. We're going to need that money to connect the red and the blue line. We're going to need that money to provide. I took T rides today where my first stop was Broadway Station. It was flooded. The escalator wasn't working. My third stop was Logan Station. The ceiling's peeling and the escalators are out. We need to accelerate state of good repair. We need to give people frequent all-day service on regional rail. We need to connect the red and the blue line and do the kinds of things that will attract riders.
All right, I want to go back to the phones. Listeners, you can jump in 1-800-423-8255. It's 1-800-423-TALK. Vic in Lexington actually supports the fares. Vic, welcome to Radio Boston. What's on your mind?
Hi. I just thought I'd say, I know you're talking about how that the T may not be getting the money that's going towards the T may not be improving the actual buses. I can only speak for the buses, but whenever I do commute, I've noticed recently that they've started adding cameras, become a lot more high tech, and like you were talking about with Uber and how we need to get this a lot more modern. The fact I personally think that this money, this increase in money, is actually worth it, because you can see the buses. With all the new tech, they make them seem a lot more safer, a lot more desirable, and I noticed a lot more people getting on the buses. So
yeah, Vic, it's an interesting point, and I want to add to that. We obviously reached out to the MBTA and the Department of Transportation, and they sent us a statement. Before the 2016 fare increase, money from fare hikes went only to cover uncontrolled increases in expenses, not to improve service. Now, because of progress to transform the MBTA, additional revenue from riders as well as from taxpayers can be invested in both assets and service improvements. Is that a valid point, Jim? Do you think that improving the service is worth maybe asking riders to chip in a little more?
I'm all for people paying an appropriate fare for improved service. And so, yeah, I see the link. But what I'm saying and what you heard yesterday from the T board is that the scale and the dimension of the capital investment needs go well beyond what could ever be addressed by periodic fare increases. And so what we need to do is just look at ourselves in the Massachusetts mirror and realize that we're not going to solve the problem on the backs of T riders with fare hikes, and that we need to turn to the people who can make a difference, the folks in the legislature and the governor, to raise the kind of significant, stable net new revenue that gets us the kinds of improvements that I talked about earlier.
But I think we also have to look at the fact that for several years, up until very recently, the T annually had hundreds of million dollars sitting in saving accounts for money that was budgeted for the cap to do these capital projects, but they couldn't get out the door. Now they're finally starting to get better at that. And that's just one microcosm of the massive problems that they have there. I have no problem with spending more money on the T if it's going to get us better service. I'm not convinced that we're at a point where it is.
So there's also an issue of cost control, right? Because if you look at some of the overtime costs, for example, in 2018, overcosts for the MBTA were at about $81.9 million. That's a 13% increase from 2017, a 30% increase from 2016, and it was more than that crazy winter we had in 2015. So is the T doing enough to control its costs?
Do you know why you pay overtime? You pay overtime because you have work to do and not enough workers to do it. And so you have to get at other people, the people who you have, to work overtime. Nobody does overtime for the fun of doing overtime. They do it because they don't have the resources.
I think that's a nice thing to say in theory.
No, it's an accurate thing to say.
But I think the most cursory look at the T's overtime, where you have years and years and years of people signing off on their own overtime, zero record of what they did. People who made $300,000 a year because they were supposedly working 90 hours a week and then having another job. I think the idea that all this overtime is happening because there's so much more work to do. I don't think there's a lot to back that up, and that would be an understatement. And I would also say that overtime is the least of the problems when you're looking at the pension and the ride and the other issues that the T has to deal with in order to make this a system that could actually absorb the money and turn it into better service.
The T is a complex system. It's an old system. is it perfect and hasn't been perfect? No. I think this governor and the secretary have done a good job correcting some of the sins of the past. I don't think Charlie, I hope he's not saying that he thinks under the Baker-Pollock administration that there's profligate spending on overtime, right? I think they have. Therefore, they're spending it on overtime because they need to do it because they don't have the resources, number one. Number two, yes, the T has to provide services like the ride by federal law, and it's a moral obligation. So there are things that cost money. But all of these things pale in comparison to the need to invest in the system and a capital side to do things like give that fellow from Worcester 15-minute service all day long, to give someone who's trying to connect from Kendall Square to Logan a connection between the blue and the red line. So we can't keep kidding ourselves that we can reform our way out of a problem that we've been neglecting for decades.
Jim, do you honestly think that taxpayers should pay for 15-minute service at 2 o'clock in the afternoon from Worcester?
Absolutely, and I'll tell you why. Okay. Because if I'm living in Worcester and I want to, and I work in Boston, and I have a kid call at 2:30 that says my kid's sick and I need to get home, I want that train to be there every 15 minutes, because if I don't, you're forcing me to drive.
But I think the point that Charlie is making is that a lot of the people that would be paying for that would not be using
right.
that service,
and
which
they,
I understand
would not be happy about paying for
to
that.
To some element, it's true for a lot of the things
this
we pay for.
This is true in a democracy,
right?
70-year-olds are not paying for education in school. They don't have children. I mean, you know, we've got to get out of this is mine and this is yours attitude. We're supposed to be a commonwealth. Having frequent all-day service at 2 p.m. is something that helps keep people off the road at peak. This is something that's of common interest to all of us.
All right, I want to go back to the phones. Nora in Dedham is on the line. Nora, welcome to Radio Boston. What's on your mind?
Yes, hello. Thank you for taking my call. What's on my mind is, what about considering a comprehensive hike? In other words, just like there's a fare for students, what if there's a study as, I mean, people say, well, this is my income and this is how much of a hike I can afford. Because it's not the same for, I mean, obviously it's different for everybody. And for those who are really in a low income, they would be able to contribute perhaps a little bit, which is good. But then they can get everybody can get a better service. That's my point.
Yeah. So, Nora, yeah, basically saying we should scale fares to the rider's ability to pay. How do you guys respond to that?
Well, we kind of did that yesterday. I mean, they you know, a lot, the youth pass, the senior pass, they were all held harmless. Bus service was held harmless. So, again,
I mean, there are low income riders that ride the T.
Yes, of course. But look, again, we can bring some measure of equity to fares. It's not a solution to the problem. And if you keep raising the fares on people who can afford to pay, all you're going to do is push them onto Lyft or Uber. And that, when you lose that rider who's choosing to be on the T, and you have the T basically left with only people who are using it out of necessity, you've lost its egalitarian ethos. It's a disaster waiting to happen.
All right, I want to ask about one more possible solution, and that is the always controversial gas tax. Speaker DeLeo, you mentioned earlier today, kind of referenced this while talking at a Greater Boston Chamber of Commerce breakfast, that anything and everything is on the table, including raising the gas tax. I'm thinking back to 2014, and that spirited campaign, basically. Do you guys think that's a realistic solution that might have a chance in the legislature, and would it address some of the issues we're talking about?
I think the more realistic solution is to do what I had said earlier, enact Senator Lesser's regional ballot initiative law, enact Senator Boncori and Representative Madaro's TNC fare hike law. They're already filed. They're there. Enact them before July. If the speaker wants to have a conversation about the gas tax, I'll be first in line to have that conversation. I tried raising it by 19 cents 10 years ago, and I've lived to tell the tale. Not the easiest thing to do. But sure, everything should be on the table. But what I'm saying is he's got some bills in front of him today. They should enact them into law with all due haste.
Well, I was on Jim's side in the last one when it came to the indexing it, and I lost on that.
Thanks, Jim.
I think the gas tax is okay. I think that that congestion pricing and tolling are better because they provide better demand management.
I'm really glad you raised congestion pricing, because one of the questions that I keep running through my mind is, if you enact something along those lines, folks who are kind of stuck in that 9-to-5 job, aren't you kind of punishing them for basically not having the flexibility of someone who might, in a higher paying job, have to stay home or to alternate their schedules or kind of work around the congestion?
Yeah, I mean, Look, I'm a big fan of it. I think it makes sense. I think it's a cost effective way to spread out demand and to get some cars off the road in the places where it's most congested.
I'm all for congestion pricing, but we're kidding ourselves if we think that we can politically do this without figuring out how to also toll I-93, I-91, I-495.
Absolutely.
You can't have a congestion pricing scheme that regionally is inequitable, where the only people paying are the people on the turnpike and using the Boston Harbor tunnels and bridge, right? So if we can cross the barrier and have a toll system that works regionally equitably, let's do it tomorrow.
All right, we're going to have to leave it there. I have a feeling we'll be coming back to transportation issues at some point in the near future here on Radio Boston. That's former State Transportation Secretary Jim Aloisi. He's also a member of the Transit Matters Board and the principal of Tri-Mount Consulting. And Charlie Chippio, a senior fellow at the Pioneer Institute and head of Chippio Strategies. Thanks to both you guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Stay with us. There's more Radio Boston. I'm Chris Sitter.